Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 FY24 conference call of Saxof Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anuj Sonpal from Valorem Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and a very warm welcome to you all. My name is Anuj Sonpal from Valorem Advisors. We represent the investor relations of Saxof Limited. On behalf of the company, I would like to thank you all for participating in the company's earnings call for the second quarter and first half of the financial year 2024. Before we begin, let me mention a short cautionary statement. Some of the statements made in today's earnings call may be forward-looking in nature. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties which could cause actual results to differ from those anticipated. Such statements are based on management's beliefs as well as assumptions made by and information currently available to management. Audiences are cautioned not to place any undue reliance on these forward-looking statements in making any investment decisions. The purpose of today's earnings call is purely to educate and bring awareness about the company's fundamental business and financial quarter under review. Now, let me introduce you to the management participating with us in today's earnings call and hand it over to them for opening remarks. We firstly have with us Mr. Aditya Krishna, Chairman and Managing Director, and Mr. Neeraj Ganeriwal, Chief Operating Officer and Group CFO. Without any further delay, I request Mr. Aditya Krishna to start with his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Anuj. Hello and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome and thank you for joining our Q2 and first half FY24 earnings call today. Let me first give a brief introduction to Saxof for the sake of some of the participants who may be new to the company. Saxof is a digital transformation partner that assists its customers to automate, modernize, and manage IT systems through a combination of domain-specific technology solutions and solution accelerators from consulting to support. We have been in business for almost two decades now, with offices across 17 locations covering USA, Asia-Pacific, UK, and Europe. We have an associate strength of 2,000+. The key verticals that we operate in are fintech, telecom and utilities, transportation logistics, public sector, retail, and health tech. The interconnected nature of the verticals mentioned addresses a huge market, which also facilitates us to cross-sell and upsell service offerings to our clients. These verticals are supported by horizontal service offerings spanning analytics, cloud solutions, legacy modernization, intelligent automation, application development, and testing. As a company, we offer a comprehensive suite of digital transformation services. Now, moving on to the quarter under review. We are happy to report another quarter of consistent and steady growth. In the current quarter, we continued our growth performance with 16% year-on-year growth in revenue and 31% growth in profit after tax. In the face of the evident slowdown in the IT sector, Saxof's long-standing track record of differentiation remains prominently evident. We continue to reward our shareholders, with the board announcing a 40% interim dividend for this financial year, 2023-24. We take pride in stating that as part of our sustainability efforts, we have achieved carbon neutral status for the current year for the Saxof Group and are setting targets for reducing our carbon footprint year on year. We understand the value of making a positive impact on the environment, and in pursuit of this goal, we are making sustainability one of our primary objectives. Now, I would request Neeraj, my senior colleague, to give you the financial highlights for the quarter under review.
Thank you, Aditya, and thank you everyone for taking time and joining us for our earnings call today to discuss the results of the second quarter and first half year of the financial year 2024 under review. For the second quarter of financial year 24, revenues were reported at around 190.41 crores, representing a growth of around 3.8% as compared to the first quarter of FY23-24 and 16.21% year-on-year as compared to the second quarter of the previous financial year. The EBITDA reported is INR 35.81 crores. EBITDA grew by 3.7% as compared to the first quarter of FY23-24 and 39% year-on-year as compared to the second quarter of previous financial year. EBITDA margins reported are at 18.8% and the net profit for the quarter was INR 25.28 crores and the profit after tax margins stood at 13.3%. For the first half of financial year 24, revenues were reported at around INR 373.88 crores, representing a growth of nearly 20% year-on-year. The EBITDA reported for this half year was INR 70.35 crores, which grew by 45.9% as compared to the half year of the previous financial year. The EBITDA margins for the current half year stood at 18.8%. Net profit for the first half of the current year is INR 50.43 crores, which grew by around 35.8% as compared to the half year of the previous financial year. The profit after tax margin for the current half year stands at 13.5%. Now coming to the revenue split by geography for the first half of the current year, USA contributed to about 43% of our revenues. Europe contributed to 22%, while the remaining 35% has come from Asia-Pacific and other regions. The on-site revenue was 45% and offshore at 55%. The revenue split across verticals for the first half of the current year is as follows. FinTech contributed to 36%, telecom and utilities around 19%, transportation and logistics contributed 12%, public sector 4%, and health tech and retail e-commerce contributed around 6% respectively. The data days for the first half year of FY24 is around 68 days. We now come to some of our customer metrics. Saxoft has around 15 customers of US $1 million plus revenue, and we've moved one customer in this current quarter from $500,000 to $1 million client profile. The total employee count at the end of the quarter stands at 2,152, out of which 1,940 were technical, with the utilization level of the employees excluding trainees being at 83%. To achieve the USD 500 million revenue target, the company is strengthening its sales engine by adding more and more salespeople on the ground. Moving to the balance sheet as of 30th September 2024, the cash in hand is at INR 131.71 crores. That concludes the updates for the quarter and half year, and we would now like to open the floor for Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star in one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may please press star and one. A reminder to the participants, anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Saurabh Shah from AUM Fund Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, Saurabh. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just found a bit new to the company, and if it's okay, you know, maybe now or you know, so just if you could give us some...
Sorry to interrupt. Mr. Saurabh, your audio is sounding very muffled.
No problem. Is this better?
Slightly better. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi. Could you just give us some sense on what strengths SACSoft has? You know, your geographic revenue split is interesting for many other companies. And which kind of, you know, suits of strength you bring to the table when you look at your business going forward? And, you know, based on that opportunity that you see for SACSoft, especially with the acquisition, how do you see, you know, the next 3 to 5 years, you know, your growth, what investments you're likely to make? We just talk, you know, the broad level of what you expect to do for the next 3 years and what kind of matrix are you currently targeting?
Saurabh, I hope I've understood your question correctly because the line's quite bad. If I understand you correctly, you're asking what are our strengths which will enable us to grow in the future. Is that correct?
Yes. And, you know, given your current environment, the industries that you're looking to service, you know, both BFSI and the acquisition others as well, how do you see your own internal targets? Again, no guidance or anything, but how do you see your opportunity for the next 2 years?
Okay. So one thing I just want to highlight is that we are not in the BFSI segment. We are in the fintech segment. You know, that's quite a difference because we don't work for the large banks or financial institutions or insurance companies. We work for a lot of disruptors in the financial services, which are more classified under the fintech target market. So coming to our strengths, you know, the whole growth of our business and the way we are growing in the last, you know, many years, as well as how we plan to build the business going forward, is based on market niches. You know, it's about identifying a market niche, protecting that niche, and growing in that niche. So what are these niches? These niches are fintech, transportation logistics, health tech, and what we call high-tech/media telecom utilities. So in these four niches, our value proposition is very strong. We're able to compete with, you know, almost the tier one companies and also companies larger than ours when we are competing in this space. And we stay in this space. Now, these spaces are large enough for us to meet our growth objectives, you know, in the coming years. You know, and so we operate in these niches, we've identified these niches, and we protect ourselves in these niches by having accelerators. So we have solution accelerators, frameworks, so that when we talk to a prospect in this niche, they prefer us over somebody else because we already have accelerators which other companies will not have, because these are our specialized niches. And because of that, we are able to shorten the time for development, for taking something to market, you know, which eventually results in lower cost. So just to summarize, the whole strength and the whole growth engine is determined on identifying market niches, protecting these niches, and growing in these niches.
Okay. Is it possible to identify two of the niches where, you know, you see the largest opportunity going forward? You know, how have you defined them and what, you know, as you said, unique strengths you bring where you are able to compete and, you know, kind of fend off much larger players, you know, given your specialized skills?
So one of these niches or, you know, areas of our strength and which we find is a tremendous growth opportunity is fintech. You know, we have a lot of traction in that space. We have a lot of reference customers. We have a lot of accelerators in that space, and we plan to invest more and more to grow in that space. So fintech is definitely one of those. The second is transportation logistics. You know, with the advent of e-commerce and online, transportation logistics is seeing a tremendous boost in technology spend. The business is growing, and these companies traditionally have not invested in the past in technology. So now, to keep pace with what is expected from their customers, they're investing in technology. So I think transportation logistics and fintech are the two sectors where we will see, you know, more growth as we grow our business.
Thanks, Aditya. You know, obviously, they are, you know, they're two large verticals. I just meant, is it possible to be a bit more specific, maybe, you know, about a specific client or where you expect to grow much more or something, which just gives us a sense of, you know, what kind of skills within fintech. Is it on the side of, you know, kind of, and again, I'm just throwing this out, but, you know, real-time transactions, is it, you know, what, you know, the new requirements of security, what specific areas are you looking to build this thing within fintech?
Okay, so within fintech, our specialization is in RegTech and payment tech. So RegTech is a big space now because more and more compliance, more and more regulations are coming, you know, which companies have to, you know, follow. So that's one big space. And the other is payment tech, you know, online payments, payment protection, etc. So those are the two sub-verticals within the vertical of fintech that we specialize in. Now, what do we offer these guys? You know, what do we offer these prospects? It's the full, you know, suite of digital transformation services. It's from product engineering, automated testing, everything around data and analytics, cloud, migration to cloud, you know, infrastructure, security operations, network operations, you know, so the entire suite of digital services is what we offer. But, you know, this, the strength of our company is the focus. You know, we are very, very focused, we're very specialized, and we work only in the niches where we have protection and where we can grow.
Okay. So, say, just taking RegTech, as you mentioned, you know, one of the two niches. So, is that a situation where you would work with certain central banks, their reporting systems for certain regions, and, you know, something like that, or is it more broad across regulators, and, you know, how would you kind of define? And also a little bit about what is your solution. Is it defining on creating specific projects for clients and, you know, then again, kind of testing out the services and reporting systems and then stopping, or is it more platform-driven? Are you looking to change any of that? Some more color?
Yeah, so it's framework dependent. So, for example, when I say RegTech, I'm talking about regulations. Let's take the case of U.S. In the U.S., SEC is a big regulator. Right? Now, they regulate hedge funds. They regulate asset management companies. They regulate financial companies. Not necessarily large banks, because remember, large banks are not our customers. So, our customers are companies which are in the RegTech space. So companies which are helping their customers manage the compliance to SEC guidelines. And SEC is issuing at least, I would say on average, you know, two or three new guidelines every week. You know, so and compliance is becoming more and more difficult, more and more cumbersome for players in the financial services industry. So we work for the organizations that support larger banks, financial companies to manage these compliances. So we are not suppliers to the banks. We are suppliers to the organizations, the RegTech companies that are putting framework, that are putting products together to be able to supply to banks.
Understand. Any names you can throw out, so what kinds of companies these are without sharing, you know, what revenue, et cetera, but something just to give us a sense of, you know, how large these companies are and how they're doing?
You know, I can't give you names of our customers, but what I can do is our typical size of these organizations is anywhere between $100 million to $2 billion, okay, in terms of top line, $2 to $3 billion. And their technology spend is typically, you know, 8 to 10% of their revenue. So we have a fair amount of runway to be able to grow our business in these customers.
So your share of wallet, you think, can grow quite large, and that's what you meant, right? I mean, you
we can definitely grow in these accounts. Now, obviously, that's a generic statement. Every customer won't grow. But by and large, before we take on a customer, we try and analyze and assess that they have a reasonable amount of technology spend for us to be able to grow our share of wallet.
In capital markets, Reg is a large part of your whole RegTech kind of offering. Is that right?
Say that again, Saurav.
Capital markets reporting is a large part, it sounds like, of your RegTech. Is that fair?
Yes. For example, hedge funds are, you know, there's a lot of focus on compliance of hedge funds. So, yes, capital markets would be one part, yes.
Fair enough. And in payment tech, what would be your kind of profile of customers?
Companies, I'll give you an example. A company that has developed cardless cash withdrawal. You know, now it's pretty much standard in the industry, but, you know, we were the first, you know, we worked with the first company that developed cardless cash withdrawal. So, go to an ATM, and without a card, you can withdraw cash. So the entire product development, product engineering, testing was done by us.
Hmm. And here the customers are, what kind of customers? Are they, again, independent networks who provide services to the large banks and other people, or is it, you know, banks, or is it, you know, who are the customers?
It could be software suppliers or people, you know, companies building products to supply to banks. So in this case, it was a product. It was a product company which sold the product to MasterCard. We developed the product.
Okay. Got it. So it sounds like you're kind of working with the solution providers where there is a lot of technology change and digital change happening at the end customer level. And that sounds like that's a large constituent of your customers, right? I mean, of course, the end customer would be in different industries, so the drivers could be different, but as far as your solutions are concerned, you're at the back, you know, helping these software guys kind of deliver to their clients.
Yeah, I mean, that is one segment of it. I mean, the independent software vendors and software providers, but we also work with enterprises. So, for example, in the fintech space, we work with credit management companies, companies that are actually operating and running credit bureaus. So that's, again, fintech for us. So it's not only product suppliers, it's also enterprises.
Understand. What percent do you, would you be able to disclose how much, you know, would be are these software kinds of companies as your customers versus the end enterprise, you know, who are using it on their own platforms?
I don't have the number offhand.
Okay, I don't know. And the model, I mean, as it exists and as it continues, you expect it to be kind of, again, custom app and billing for a project, or do you anticipate, I mean, I'm sure your customers might be charging the end customer on a per use or, you know, on a different model, but do you have a variable model or a fixed, you know, per transaction or per unit kind of thing at all, or do you expect to get there?
No, we don't. We don't, and that's not our engagement model. Our engagement model is predominantly time and material, so 95% of our work is time and material.
Got it. And how do you see the, you know, over a period of time, you're building out more strengths? Do you expect at any time to go and acquire any customer or, you know, be able to deal directly, or you think that would be, you know, in the software customer space I'm talking about? Or do you think that, you know, you're comfortable with the, you know, current business model?
What do you mean by acquiring customers?
Say, for example, just now you're providing services to people who are building out solutions for hedge funds. Would you like at some point to, you know, acquire somebody who's directly providing these services to the hedge funds and be engaged, you know, instead of going through another company or providing the back end to another company, engaged directly at all?
No, that is not in the plan, and I don't think that is something that we will venture into, because that will mean that we'll become a product company. And, you know, we're not a product company. We're a technology services company, and we plan to stay like that.
Sure. Understand. And how do you see the market in terms of pricing and other things? You see continued large kind of blue sky available to you for, you know, both your enterprise and your software customers?
No pushback on pricing as of now. The only thing that we see pushback is really a little bit of delayed decision making because of, you know, the fragility of the economy, the world economy. But no pushback on pricing.
Sure, sure. The contribution from Asia Pac seems quite large. Give us some context as to what solutions you're offering there, and how is that growth, and are you seeing less, you know, kind of delays over there, or is that, you know, comparable to the rest of the world?
No, that's a good point, and the reason for that really is that, you know, we are following the customer. So some of our customers for whom we were working, let's say in the U.S., they have built their own GCCs, you know, the Global Capability Centers in India, and now we are supplying services to them in India. So that's really, it's really, you know, one pocket to the other. So some of our business has moved from the U.S. to Asia Pacific for that reason.
Got it. So the end customer nationality could probably be again in the, you know, developed market, but this is the GCC, the customer entity you're billing versus the ultimate entity.
Correct. That's right.
Yeah, GCC has a scale large. So, okay. Any other business, you know, any other place that you expect to grow the most, Aditya, in the next 2-3 years, apart from these two segments? Because it sounded like very strong niches, as you said, the credit bureaus and this kind of capital markets software solutions providers.
No, I think fintech, transportation, logistics, U.S. geography, I think most of our growth is going to come definitely from the U.S. geography. That is the epicenter of technology spend in the world economy. I don't think that's changing anytime in the near future. So really the focus and the growth will come from the U.S. And I think these two segments are strong enough, large enough for us to get to our, you know, goals, revenue goals. Yeah. Saurabh, we need to give somebody else a chance to.
Sure, sure. I'll try to come back. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Saurabh.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahil Shah from Crown Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon. So in the niche areas you mentioned, right, and then you said there's two in particular where you excel and you see most growth. From an overall sense, I wanted to ask what makes you unique, because I'm pretty sure there are other competitors in this space very, very similar to you. So are there any? How many are there? And so, yeah, so that's the main question. Like, what makes others choose you over? So that would be my first, yeah.
Okay. Rahul, let me answer it in a little different way. You know, let me ask you, you know, when you go to, you know, let's say you have a problem, you go to a specialist, right? Now, for that specialist, you will do some reference checks. You will talk to some customers of that specialist. Now, that's really our value proposition. So when we go to a prospect, let's say in fintech, we are able to showcase the work we have done in the space. We are able to showcase our reference customers. We are able to get the prospect to talk to our reference customers. We are able to show accelerators and frameworks in that space. And it's not that the larger players don't have, you know, similar frameworks, but they don't have the similar level of specialization like we do, because they're generalists. For their size, they have to do everything and everything. You know, we don't do everything. We do only specialized work, and those are the niches I was talking about. So it's really a comparison when you chase a customer or you try and win business from a customer. You want to deal with a specialist who understands your space, or you want to deal with a generalist who does everything. You know, and normally, customers prefer specialists, especially if they are mature in their software development lifecycle. I'll answer it in another way. You know, the tier one players like big deals. They like deals where, you know, they can do a little bit of everything. You know, they respond to large RFPs. They do multi-million, multi-year contracts. We don't do that, you know, because we are, number one, catering to smaller organizations who are not that sophisticated in their buying process, but they're very mature in their development cycle, software development cycles. And that's really our strength, you know, so specialization over a general player.
Got it. Okay. Secondly, given this vision statement of yours, right, you want to achieve a certain target by. So how will this be spread out over the years? Is it going to be gradual? The growth we will see will be gradual? Or is there a certain phase, like, you know, in certain niches, like there's heavy investments going on right now, so that will be scaling up way more than later? How is it going to work? Just a general sense from a demand scenario perspective and how the environment is for all the business verticals.
You know, I don't have a crystal ball, so, you know, I can't tell you what's going to happen this year, next year, the following year in terms of specifics. But what I know is if we grow 25% year on year, we'll get to 500 million by 2030.
So the point I was trying to make is in the near term, right, in the medium term at least, so is it going to be a heavy kind of a growth, or this will be like you said, 25% is something to target, and then you will work on that?
So we have to do minimum 20 to 25% to get to 500 million. Okay, and that's our goal. Now, that will happen organic, inorganic. It all depends on what opportunities open up. You know, it's difficult to really say that all of it will come from inorganic or organic. You know, at any point in time, we have multiple balls in the air, you know, which we're trying to land. So it's really difficult for me to say that, okay, this year will be a mix. It'll be predominantly inorganic, or next year will be purely organic. It's a difficult statement for me to make.
No, of course. So do you have any inorganic plans at the moment which you would like to share, or it's still under, like, you know, process?
I can't share with you, but yes, you know, we're always talking to companies. If you see our track record, in May, we announced an acquisition of a digital commerce company. In August, we announced the acquisition of a digital commerce company called Solveda. At any point in time, we are talking to multiple targets, and hopefully something will mature. But leave that aside. The goal is 20 to 25% growth, organically and inorganically, you know, a combination, you know, and if we can do that, we can get to our goal.
Okay, and to support that growth, like, not to support that growth, but like from that growth, these margins are quite sustainable as well?
If you see the last 3 years, last 4 years, margins have been pretty much consistent, increasing. Okay, maybe one quarter there's a slight dip because of salary increases, etc. See, a lot of tier one companies didn't give salary increases this year. We gave salary increases in April. You know, mm-hmm. So that will result in some drop in EBITDA margins in the first quarter, but it catches up.
Okay. I'll get back in queue. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Rahul.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hasmukh Visaria from SUD Life. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I have a couple of questions. So firstly, on service mix, so you called out, exposure through digital engineering, your cloud and infra, etc. But will it be possible to quantify it? How much, revenue comes from all these services? Or what would be the service mix as such?
Okay, how much is coming from product engineering, how much from testing? We can send that to you.
Okay, fine, yeah. And in terms of, let's say, deal wins, will it be possible to give a color how the current deal wins are for you vis-a-vis last quarter or 1 year back or any sense around it?
You know, when we forecast anything, when we look at our numbers, we look at approximately 90 to 95% of our growth coming from existing customers and the balance only coming from new customers. So for us, we don't really have a deal pipeline. We have what we call a prospect pipeline. New customers being added to our mix, and then how fast can we grow these new customers to 500,000 and then $1 million plus customers. So that's typically how we look at it, because unlike the tier ones, we don't really respond to RFPs, you know, and large contracts, because we're not in that game. You know, like I explained earlier, we are operating in niches. We are operating in company with prospects who are specialized players. We are a specialized player. So typically they're not very mature in their buying process. They're mature in their product, in their software development lifecycle, but not in their buying. So it's difficult to give you a deal pipeline, but we have a very strong prospect pipeline, which we are constantly maturing and taking forward.
Understood, understood. And lastly, considering your, let's say, niche, you as a niche player, what would be, let's say, our competitors, and how would pricing for a particular deal would be for us vis-a-vis, let's say, peers?
You know, in most cases, you know, when we're operating in niches, prospects don't really worry so much about price. They are looking for a supplier or a partner who understands what has to be done, because the cost of failure is very high. Remember, these are mission-critical applications. This is mission-critical to the business of our customer. If this fails, the business of our customer and prospect will be impacted. So they're not going to worry about, you know, pricing so much. They're more worried about capability. So if we can demonstrate strong capability, if we can demonstrate, you know, strong case studies, reference customers, similar work that we have done, it's pricing in 90% of the cases doesn't matter. And where it does matter, the 10% and all, we normally stick to our rate card. We have a rate card in which we work. You know, give or take 5% here and there to win a deal, we'll do. Otherwise, we'll stick to it.
Understood. And as far as peers are concerned, who would be, let's say, major competitors, if you can highlight some of the names?
Who would be some of them? You know, in most cases, there will be a local player. You know, there will be, for example, if we're talking to a prospect in fintech, they'll have a local partner who they're working with, you know, who will not have an offshore presence. There would be a pure consulting company. That would be a typical partner. You know, and there are a lot of these small companies in the U.S., you know. Then in terms of the larger players, we come across Capgemini quite often. We come across Accenture quite often. We come across Persistent quite often. Those are some of the names.
Understood. Understood. Thanks for that. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone wishing to ask a question, may please press star in one. The next question is on the line of Drashti Shah, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes.
Hi, sir. I only have one question. So we've seen most of the IT industry facing headwinds in Q2, but we've grown well both in terms of top line and bottom line. So just wanted to understand our differentiator that's helping us grow.
You know, the answer is the same Ms. Shah, it is the fact that we're operating in niches. Now, when you're a specialist player, you'll always have business. When you're a general player, you will, have to struggle a little bit when there's a slowdown or there is a headwind. And that's really it. I mean, and also, because of our size, being smaller than the tier one, it's easier to also show or grow better, than the larger players. So, whenever you're a market leader, a headwind in the market affects the market leader more than anybody else. So I think that's one of the benefits of not being a market leader.
Sure, that was helpful. And just to confirm, we are seeing 18 to 19% EBITDA margins on a sustainable basis, right?
That's correct, yes.
Sure, thank you. That's it from my end. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Amit Jain from Monarch Networth Capital Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, Amit.
Hello, Aditya, and congratulations on a very strong set of numbers.
Thank you.
Aditya, just two questions. One thing on this, you mentioned about that 90-95% of the business coming from the existing customers. So our growth is basically dependent on those customers. As they grow, we grow. And secondly, they're rising the wallet share. So somehow, I'm just remembering that you were a year back, you mentioning about the problems on the sales side. So acquiring the acquisition of new clients, is it still a pain point for the company?
Yes, it is. The challenge for us, this is a sort of a tightrope that we have to walk, Amit. You know, we have to keep investing in salespeople. The good part is, vis-a-vis the last time, we probably had this conversation is that because we are a little larger company now, we are able to attract better talent. So, for example, we have a new salesperson who has joined us on the West Coast of the U.S. About a month ago, and every 6 months, we will hire another salesperson in the U.S. every 6 months. Because that's the only way we can organically increase our growth rate, of acquiring new customers. We need more feet on the street, and we will do that. Now, why can't we do more? The reason we can't do more is you've seen the questions that come on EBITDA margins, right?
Yes.
So we have to pace ourselves, if we were not a listed entity, if we are private equity owned, it doesn't matter, you can let margins go to the dogs and keep investing in salespeople. But here we can't take that chance. We have to walk that tightrope.
Understood. Aditya, second, on this, you mentioned about one of your customer competitor as persistent, and this space is really doing well, this whole ERD space, political engineering and R&D services. And just if you can just give some color on this, maybe how success is positioned in this area, and maybe and what's your view on the growth in this particular, because everybody is now optimistic on this space among all the IT companies in the IT sector.
See, number one, Persistent is a large company. It's $1 billion-plus company, right? Now, our customers or prospects are companies which are $100 million to $2 or $3 billion in sales. The product companies are smaller. They are typically $100 million, maximum $250-300 million. You don't see $1 billion product companies in our customer base. Now, those companies are not going to deal with Persistent, because they're not going to deal with a supplier who's 10 times or 20 times bigger than they are. They want more attention, which a company like ours can give them. So I don't think we need to worry so much about Persistent. The good thing about Persistent is that, they are growing on their own. Secondly, they have developed the market to a great extent. So product engineering is now something which is widely accepted, and it's easier for us to sell. But again, when we talk about product engineering, we're talking about that only in the niches that we operate in: fintech, transportation logistics, health tech, you know, and high tech. So really, you know, we are working in a much smaller subset of the target market that Persistent operates.
So, Aditya, I was not worried about that. I was asking about the overall, this is space, how this is space you see, and if you can just give some idea, so how much revenue we are getting from this is space, the product engineering side, just some sense of it, and how you see that your success is positioned in this particular space. I'm not comparing it with Persistent. I completely understand, appreciate that you are not in that, you're not in direct confrontation with Persistent. That's a complete different league. So my question was on this particular space and how the company is positioned in this space. How much revenue, if you can just throw something, how much revenue we are getting from this particular service.
So how much revenue do we get from application services? More than 50%. Yes. More than 50% of our revenues are coming from application services, and product engineering would be a subset of that. Okay. So that's in terms of numbers. Now, this is a hot space for sure, because more and more SaaS, more and more products are getting developed in the US and world over. And outsourcing of or offshoring of product engineering is becoming very, very common. So definitely this is a hot space. Now, where our strengths are and where we are different is, again, we are operating only in those niches that I spoke about.
Understood. Thanks, Aditya. Thank you, Amit.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hemant, a retail investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, Aditya. So this, just to understand, this revenue is all one-time revenue, is it? Or do you also have support services wherein you get recurring revenue?
You know, 95% of our engagements are time and material. So they are ongoing. And ongoing means not only development, but also testing, also infrastructure, also support. So to answer your questions, this is, you know, sticky revenue. It is ongoing revenue, you know, and which is what is important for us and which is what we focus on when we look at new prospects and new customers.
Right. But for a customer, it would come down at some point, right? It would be higher initially and then probably come down when it's just the support once you finish all the development, is it? Is that how it works?
Yeah, I mean, one would normally think that will happen, but, you know, life is not like that. You build a product as, I'm talking, let's take a company which is into product development, is building a software product. They will build the product, you know, once the product is over, there'll be enhancements. There'll be a next generation of products. So it never ends. It might taper off a little bit up and down, but, you know, it's pretty much never going to go away. It's a drug. You know, once you're hooked on the drug, you can't let go of it.
Got it. Thanks, Aditya. Another question is the third-party support expenses that I see on the P&L, is that your consultants for development activity, or can you just explain what that is?
Sure. Neeraj, hi, Hemant. This is Neeraj here. That the third-party support is basically the cost of the freelancers and the contract market which we go to manage our utilization. So it's basically, you know, when we don't want to hire full-time employees or there are some certain projects which require certain people to join, it's in relation to that. So it's all related to development and it's all related to the delivery costs.
Got it. Understood. That's it from me. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Soham Gupta, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Aditya. Am I audible?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, congratulations on a good set of numbers. I had a couple of questions, Aditya. So you had given a guidance of $100 million in revenue for FY25, but you were confident of achieving the objective this year itself. So if you see the first two quarters of this year, I think we've clocked around 376 crores of revenue. So that's another, we need to clock like around 210 crores in the next two quarters. So are you confident of getting that run rate for the second half of this financial year? And my second question was regarding Solveda. I believe we acquired this company in August of this year. So is the impact of the revenues of Solveda already in quarter two, or we will see that from quarter three onwards? Thank you.
So the answer to your first question is yes. You're confident of hitting 100 million in this financial year, which is 1 year ahead of what we are originally targeted. Yes, and Solveda, there is a portion of this year's this quarter's numbers, a small portion this quarter, and the full impact will be in quarter three.
Okay, so then that should see the revenue jumping into the 200 club from Q3 onwards then. Is that right? Is my understanding right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so thank you so much and wishing you all the very best for the future, and hopefully the 500 million target can be achieved earlier than 2030. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arvind, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Arvind.
Hello, sir. The whole IT industry is getting slowed down, but SaaS are done well. But in Q1 and Q2 of FY24, the revenues are getting flat and the net profit is getting flat.
I hear you. Arvind, I'm not able to hear you. Yeah.
Hello? I'm audible, sir. Hello?
Yeah, it's not very clear, Arvind. Go ahead.
Arvind, may we request that you use the handset mode while speaking and not the speakerphone?
Hello? Am I audible, sir?
Better, Arvind. Please go ahead.
Arvind, please proceed. Mr. Arvind, please proceed with your question. There's no response from the line of Arvind, and that was our last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for their closing comments.
We thank everyone for taking out time to participate in this call and for their interest in SACSoft. I hope we've been able to answer your queries. In case of any other queries, please reach out to us or our investor relation advisors, Valorem Advisors. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the management team. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of SACSoft Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.